Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about.
Our guest this week is Tommy Haunton. Tommy is a Los Angeles-based experience designer who specializes in weaving interactivity and game mechanics into narrative storytelling. Across the United States, he's produced interactive and immersive work for audience sizes ranging from 1 to 80,000. He's also the co-creator and designer of the critically acclaimed escape room Stash House, and he's the co-founder of the interactive exhibition Museum of Selfies. Hi, Tommy.
Hello.
Hi, Tom. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're really glad to have you. And Kevin and I have actually been trying to get together to do an escape room together because we're both fans of them. But we both live in different cities, so it's taking a little while to do.
That makes it a challenge. But I would love to have you guys, if you are ever in the LA area, to come out.
Oh, good. There's a reason for you to come down, Kevin.
Yeah, I know exactly. I'll be there and try to escape. If I don't escape, then what happens?
That's actually a kind of a point of how the industry is changing, is that the idea of failure, win-loss, binary sort of success rates is kind of becoming an arbitrary construct. And I think companies are more going towards eventually, you don't win or lose, but you kind of unlock a story or the choices that you've ultimately made. And so for us, we do not have a failure rate. We have 100% success rate because we want people to get through the whole experience.
Wow, that's really great.
I love that idea. The
yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, so we'll talk a little bit more about your work in escape room design and production and stuff, but let's talk about some of the tools. And I'm looking at the show notes now. You've kind of categorized these into systems that you use.
Yes.
Which I think is great. So tell us, you have a tool that you call your scheduling system.
Yeah, it's hard because I used to be reliant upon just my memory. And the challenge really came about with all the stuff that I'm juggling. How do I keep it all straight? And honestly, I can't. I have to have something that I can rely on. Using a Google Calendar was fine, but the hard part came really from how am I going to manage my tasks? And so I was struggling to find something like Evernote and, even Google has a list sort of a task manager, but nothing really worked very well. It didn't look good. I wanted one that could work both on my phone and on my computer that could also have ported over to my calendar. So I ended up finding that Trello works really well, where I can schedule tasks and events through my workload and look at my schedule. So I know that the deadlines that I set for myself are right on the calendar, the same with meetings and calls and everything else. So the two of those is a really powerful tool, just having the at-a-glance ability to look at my day and my agenda and knowing that if I set a deadline for something, I can see it attached to everything else I have going on.
And is Trello an app that you purchase, or is it a website, or how does this work?
Yeah, it's an app/website. It's a service that is, it's freemium where you can use it for free up to a certain point. What's interesting is the way they approach it is they have certain kind of add-ons which allow you to sort of integrate with other services. And so if you want to pay for it, you can get a lot of add-ons. But for me, all I really wanted was the Google Calendar add-on. And so that is free technically as a free user. But if you want to go and start adding more people or make it sort of enterprise style, then it's going to cost you. But for now, it's at a very reasonable price of free.
So Tommy, can you explain a little bit, why can't you just use Google Calendar alone?
I like to sort of mind map out my tasks and separate them by and organize them by project. And so I ultimately want the ability to set projects and create sort of data points for storing notes and schedules and tasks within one system. Mm-hmm. And with Trello, it's really easy where I can create sort of a project and then build out items from there and keep track of it that way. So I really like that process of being able to organize visually and sort of see how projects move around. I'm obsessively organized. I love visualizing things, both in terms of planning and in terms of looking back to how sort of I planned. Because if I want to go back to a project and say, I really like the way I organized that, and I can pull up the entire tree of how I built that project. So I like being able to save and archive stuff. So doing something as simple as Google Calendar and arbitrarily scheduling certain events is fine if it's a one-off. But for me, I like to have all that organized. And having a tool that's smart that can integrate like that is really valuable.
Okay. So that's a great one. And what's another kind of a system that you have note taking? You like to take notes. What are some of the tools that
you use? So I love doing digital like note taking because I'm obsessively organized and I hate keeping paper things. They're easy to lose, and if I know they're back up in the cloud, it's easy for me to pull up on my computer and phone. However, I've noticed in interactions with people that if you're on your phone taking notes, it makes it sort of like you're distracted. People, and I always have to say like I'm on my phone, it's notes, and I show them the note app saying like I'm not messing around, this is just note taking. But there's something about the tactile sensation of using a pen to paper for sketches and for writing. So I always go into a meeting usually with a notebook. And I love field notes. I used to use Moleskine or Moleskiner. There's people debating how you pronounce it. And I've gotten crap from people about Moleskine because they say it's leather, because I have friends that are vegans. It's not. It is vegan. It feels like leather. It is not real leather. So having a reliable notebook is really, really nice. But I really love the Field Notes brand right now. There's a really great thing called their In Papers, which are a thicker book that's thinner that fits perfectly in pockets of all size. And I also like writing with Sharpies. I don't know why, but I use ultra fine tip Sharpies. It does bleed through a little bit, but I don't write on the backs of the pages. But the feeling of a Sharpie and knowing it's not going to smear is really, really like satisfying to me.
Oh, that's
so I usually
cool.
go with, yeah,
that's,
I love going with like two or three
Sharpie that I haven't thought
I
of.
I love it.
No smearing.
Yeah, as soon as it dries, it's dry. You don't have to worry about getting, you know, even if it wet, you know, gets wet, it doesn't bleed as much as it would be, you know, with a regular pen. So I always use those as physical note taking. But then I have a system where whenever I'm done with a meeting, I will photograph the pages I just did, create either a something out of Google Keep, which is the note taking app, or out of Google Docs, I'll make a document, and I'll basically put the images of my notes or drawings, and then also add anything that I've thought of in the meantime. So that way I have them backed up in the cloud or saved. And I like using, so I just do my phone camera, I take a photo of the stuff. That way, again, if I lose the notebook, which I have lost so many notebooks in my life by leaving them behind somewhere, that at least I know immediately as I'm done, I have it backed up. So that process just makes everything that I keep as far as notes so much more like reliable, you know?
I know I've heard some people who actually send it to Evernote, and they and Evernote is able to OCR it?
Yeah, I've used OCR, which is optical character recognition, which translates your text into you know, typable and copyable text. But my handwriting is not that great sometimes, and sometimes it just gets way off. So for me, I don't take that many notes where I can't type it up in 20 minutes. I've never been in that position before. And rarely do I ever need to even retype my notes, but having a backup of them is so valuable. So Evernote's cool, but I just don't, I've never found their organization system that reliable for me. And so I'm sure it's a great service, but some people it works for, but I'm baked into the Google ecosystem. So that's why I stick with it. But Evernote, I've heard has gotten better and has some really cool features. So, you know, I don't use it, but I think having a system like that in place for both physical tactile notes that then you can digitize is really valuable.
The thing that scares me about Google Keep is that so many of these amazingly cool Google products go away and then you get orphaned. I'm thinking of like FeedBurner, Plus, the URL shortening service. There are many others too. And so, I assume if they do decide to close it, they'll give you advance notice so that you can migrate your data or download everything. But that's one thing that really bugs me about Google is how they just banned cool things.
I agree 1,000,000%. They kill stuff easily. There's actually a couple different obituaries and graveyards of projects that Google has killed. So trust me, no one was more aggravated than me when they closed Google Reader. So, I understand with Keep, it's just such a simple app that I was shocked if they did. Plus, it integrates with Docs, so you can transfer a note over to Docs. I don't think they're ever going to get rid of their, Microsoft Office style suite of stuff. So long as I've got Docs, at least I can use that. Keep is so much easier to use for short systems of notes. And then it's cool is that you can actually export over a note from Keep into Doc and create a doc out of it. So I love that feature. So I don't think they will. It's just, if to me, it's such an easy app for them to manage, and it makes sense for them to keep it going. But if they do get rid of it, I'll just find an alternative. But for now, I think we're good.
And what else do you have on your list of things that you're using? Is it another Google product?
No, actually, two non-Google products, thankfully, because I don't like giving one company everything. I love to keep track of my consumed entertainment. It's cool. I'm obsessive about data, and I like being able to track when I saw movies, TV shows. There's a really cool service called Tracked that is really interesting. It lets you sort of track when you watched movies or TV shows and stuff you own and what you have in your collection. But on top of that, what's cool is that I have an app. Tracked does not make their own app. So there's an app that I love called Series Guide that lets me keep track of everything I've watched. And then if there are shows I enjoy, it lets me know when they're coming back. So it's cool for both movies and TV. I wish there was a way to keep track of all forms of entertainment. Podcasts, I'm a huge podcast junkie. Books, you know, and I don't like using multiple apps. Track TV just does such a great job of keeping movies and TV shows in sync. So then for everything else, I have a Google Sheet that I just keep track of books, podcasts, plays, escape rooms, experiences like that. But I do wish there was some service out there that would have everything under one roof. Like, what'd you consume? What was it? Link to it. Here's a date. Who'd you see it with? Where was it? You know, I just love having all that data on hand, along with notes about if I enjoyed it, you know, that kind of stuff.
So how does Track work? Where does that live in order to be able to basically kind of monitor whatever you're doing? So like Netflix, I guess it's somehow reading your Netflix history.
Oh, yeah. So it's you having to actively manage it. It does have some extensions where I think it can sync up with like through a plugin with Netflix on a PC or on a computer, or it can sync up with like Plex or Kodi, which are like streaming servers you can install on your home computer. But I just go through and I have a habit of whenever I watch a show or program, I just immediately go and say that I watched it. It's like checking in, you know, back in the Foursquare days, but instead of checking into a store or location, you're checking into a program.
I see. Okay. So it's not like something like maybe it would be built into or accessing your Apple TV streaming and your Roku or what you see on your computer, or if you're using a player. It's sort of more like is this reminding you that you need to enter this information by hand?
No, yeah, I have to do it by hand. So it's something that I do manually. Like I go through and I'll check it off as soon as I walk out of a movie theater or when an episode airs roughly, just so I know I finished it and watched it. So I have to train myself to do that. At some point, I wouldn't be surprised if there is the way to add in, you know, a way to monitor you. But I don't mind the manual, you know, nature of it. It just makes it easy because I don't have to type anything. I just check the box and it automatically pings, you know, where I was when I watched it and what's next if there's multiple episodes of a series.
And this is a phone app?
It's a web service. So it's a website. And then they don't make their own app. And so there are multiple – they have an open API though. So there are multiple apps that are existing that use Tracked as its database. So the one I enjoy is called Series Guide. So that uses like Tracked as the – it's like Tracked as the internal database. And then different apps are able to like plug into it. So the one I use on my Android phone is Series Guide.
Okay. So you use the app to load into the Track, which is a database. Okay.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I don't know why Track never made an app. I think it would make sense if they had a first-party app. But, you know, Series Guide is great. And so I don't mind, using something that's reliable. Plus, just on my infinite level of scheduling, it also lets me know when shows I want to watch are coming back. So if there's something binge-worthy that I know is coming back that I want to see, I know it's coming back. So it keeps track of that for me.
Does Track also kind of round up or look at all the available streams and tell you what's playing on what?
Oh yeah, that's another way I discover stuff because it has a really nice recommendation system. So it knows every single piece of media I've seen. And so what's cool is that knowing if I, you know, then you can start rating it. It basically just, it has a really nice baked in system that can suggest, although I am way behind on watching anything. So I'm trying to avoid any kind of recommendations as distractions. But it's nice to know because some of the stuff I've seen, I'm like, you know what, that actually looks pretty good. So I have checked out some stuff, which I like the idea of, again, having a system that knows me and can help recommend stuff that I think you would enjoy.
What are you watching now that you enjoy that a lot of people might not know about?
Oh my God, the series Counterpart, I cannot rave enough about. It is on Stars. It stars J.K. Simmons. It is a perfect marriage of science fiction and like Cold War spy thriller. J.K. Simmons and the entire cast are phenomenal. I can't rave about it enough. I've got my girlfriend watching it now. It is such a good show and it is beautifully written, well performed, just such a compelling program that I cannot recommend it enough.
Oh, good. I've never heard of it, so.
Yeah, it flies under a lot of people's radars because it's, you know, we're in peak TV where we're in the golden age where there's so many great programs out there across so many different streaming networks and platforms that it's hard to keep track of everything. And that's why I rely on word of mouth or things that just really keep popping up through. And I'd heard from a few friends that Counterpart was good and they were completely right. So I'd recommend if you have any interest in spy thrillers or, you know, a bit of like Cold War paranoia, it's so good.
And this runs on what stream is it running on?
I believe it's on Stars, but I'm sure you can access it through, you know, whatever kind of cross deals there are. I think you can watch it via Amazon. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's on Stars is how I consume it.
Okay, cool. I'll add it to Series Guide. I'm downloading it now.
Yes, it's absolutely worth watching. And it'll tell you exactly when the episodes air and how far you are behind.
That's so cool. Okay, so your final pick are some adhesive type materials that you want to put in your toolbox or that you keep in your toolbox.
Yeah, owning an escape room and anything that's sort of interactive that people are going to touch or handle that's tactile, you know, you have to really appreciate durability of something. And the three things that we use probably the most, E6000, first of all, is a beautiful craft adhesive. Having a bonding agent or some kind of epoxy that can keep things, you know, safe and from breaking or being torn off is really valuable. I love E6000. It is incredible. It is multi-purpose. It sticks to any material. I've used it on almost every kind of material from fabric to glass to wood, and it works like a charm. So I love E6000. And I love clear coating stuff. Anything that is going to be touched that could bend or break that has sharp edges, it can be smoothed over so easily by attaching a couple layers of clear coat on it. I love Rust-Oleum, the brand that makes sort of finishers and you know, stains and stuff. But you know, anything that you're going to have people touch that can peel or have any issue, I love using it. Probably every single thing that we have in our game in the escape room is coated on some level to protect it from getting sort of rubbed against or worn or faded. And then personally, I love a thing called Sugru. It is a putty-like glue, and it feels kind of like Silly Putty. It comes in interesting colors, you know, white, black, yellow, blue, really cool primary colors. And you get it in these kind of like little gum, almost like a stick of gum. And it's just this putty, and you wrap it around something, and then it dries in a couple hours, and it hardens into almost like a hard rubber. So I've used it on a lot of stuff personally. So when my headphones begin to fray, do Sugru on that, it sticks. I have a lot of buttons that I wear on my bags. I have a lot of a problem, you could say, with pins and buttons on my backpack and my laptop bag. And so when those things are threatening to fall off, I do a little bit of Sugru, and when it dries, it holds them in. So Sugru is amazing. It's such a cool tool. And watching how people have figured out different things to do with it, plus it's just fun to play with. So those three things I probably use more than I can possibly imagine or ever would have imagined.
I heard that Sugru was going out of business. Is that a rumor that I misheard or what?
Please don't say that because that would break my heart.
Okay. Sorry. Well, I won't. I retract it. Or maybe it was unavailable for a while, or maybe it changed ownership or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I am actually now horrified to think about that because I would be very sad if that were the case.
I hope that's not true because I use it. I keep it with me when I travel. But I also know that on Instructables, someone has claimed to have like cracked the recipe and they have a do-it-yourself version so that you can make your own.
Well, I guess if they do it to go to business, at least I know I can craft my own.
Yeah.
At the website, there is no appearance of no appearance that anything's amiss. So this must have been my mistake. So I retract that rumor.
Well, as a business, I think you just apply some Sugru to their business plan and then let it dry, and I think it'll be all set.
Yeah, it's great. No, I use it a lot too. I just used it last week to repair a dishwashing rack. So yeah, it's versatile, and I like the fact that it comes in little tiny bits.
Yes,
a sealed package, so that you don't risk wasting a lot of it. You have little bits of kind of pinches of it, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good stuff. And I should just also point out quickly, you're recommending the E6000 brand of adhesive, and on Cool Tools, in early January, when we're recording this, we have a video review of many different kinds of E6000, including spray-on, high viscosity, black E6000. It's a very versatile kind of adhesive that doesn't get hard. It's almost like hot glue that's not hot. So you can check out the whole video.
Yeah, and it's really strong. I'm so impressed with the durability of it. It is a trooper in almost every circumstance I've used.
Cool. Yeah, so check out our video. Just type in E6000 at cool-tools.org, and you can see our kind of extensive video roundup of all the different kinds of E6000 adhesives that are out there. So in the last few minutes that we have, Tommy, tell us a little bit about the escape room you have here that you created in Los Angeles called Stash House.
Yeah, so I have a producing partner. We used to write stuff together. We still do, but we wanted to create an experience because we found this live action space so engaging. And I'm a diehard game solver. I grew up playing video games and creating scavenger hunts for people. So an escape room has popped on the scene. I knew I found my calling and the space that I really wanted to produce in. And we wanted to create something that felt very underground, that was exciting and fun, that pushed a really heavy narrative, as opposed to just being puzzles for the sake of puzzles. We wanted to feel like we were crafting some kind of interesting, immersive environment with an ongoing story. And so we settled on, you know, what's something that people can get into criminally that isn't icky or disturbing, you know, where it's the pop culture has explored it. So looking at Breaking Bad, The Wire, the games Grand Theft Auto, that whole series, you know, people... The drug culture and the drug world is an interesting space because you can have people that kind of are willing to dive into it. It touches on organized crime and criminal enterprises, as well as the fact that, you know, marijuana in a lot of states recreationally is legal. So it touches in this weird, interesting area where we knew it would have crossover appeal and mainstream appeal while still kind of feeling forbidden. So the idea was, what if we create a space that's you having to go into this drug dealer's old apartment that he's made into some kind of stash house, and as your first show of loyalty to him, you have to flush the drugs he stashed in the house before the cops arrive. And that was sort of our first thought of, like, what is the thing we want to end with? And it's like, yeah, we want people to be huddled around a toilet flushing drugs. We kind of work backwards from there. And it's been a blast because we found an amazing character in this guy, Ray Jones, who's this really interesting, he's ambitious. He's charming. He's also very dangerous and ruthless. And we created a series of interesting little pop-up experiences well around the city, that pop-up festivals or art galleries that kind of tell the story of Ray's ongoing life, of him becoming this sort of kingpin in Los Angeles crime culture. And people have responded like crazy to it. So we have our permanent escape room, but then we also have these, you know, pop-up events that we keep doing, which is so much fun to produce. So that's kind of my favorite passion project, is this thing that we've made that thankfully people have really responded to.
In making the escape room, what surprised you as you made it from the beginning to the end? What were you not expecting that you came to realize?
We didn't expect, I think, well, there are a lot of things we learned. Don, my producing partner, and I realized how difficult construction and building and a lot of the mistakes we made early on are things we'd never do again. But outside of that, about other people, we really were surprised how much people responded to this antagonist. You know, we really built this character of Ray, the one who plants the drugs, the one who you know is dangerous. You know, you find throughout the experience sort of examples of his, you know, cruelty or his vindictive nature, in the same way that you'd see, like, you know, as Walter White towards the end of Breaking Bad becomes sort of vindictive. But I was really surprised that people really like Ray. You know, this is the guy that kind of tried to screw you over, and people still really liked him. And I think that's the power of our actor who plays Ray, a guy named Sidney, who's an amazing performer, who just, he made him human and charming and charismatic. And people really like villains. People love antiheroes. And even my most, what I call, like, lawful good friends, the ones that are like completely good and will never do anything evil, even they say Ray is charming. And so we had to sort of tweak the narrative slightly because no one we realized was going to turn on Ray. Everyone wanted to keep seeing where his story went. And so that was a really big surprise of like, wow, we were expecting people would not like this guy, would want to turn him in or betray him. And instead people are like agreeing to work for him and want to keep going on that journey. So we're like, well, I guess we have to kind of change how things end.
Well, that also may explain why the underworld continues often, because in spite of the fact that people are doing illegal things, they like the people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's something about, yeah, exactly. Building this, you know, the game Red Dead Redemption 2 right now has, you know, a very compelling leader that's driving his gang to doom. And it's funny because, yeah, it's amazing to watch a sort of cults of personality, you know, whether it's across a, you know, a cult or a business, you know, it's just politics. There are people that are charismatic that once you follow into the cult of personality, you'll start doing crazy things. Even if it's rooting for someone on TV who you know is a bad guy, you know, being like, yeah, I like Walter White. Like, no, he's a horrible person, but there's something about our nature.
Yeah. Or like the characters in Ozark, too.
Yes, exactly. You know, there's something interesting. I think it shows how people have a real taste for complex characters, ones that aren't just black or white, but have some different shades of, you know, elements, and cruelty and danger are something that people sort of like sort of dancing near. It fascinated me. And so, yeah, we had to actually adjust sort of how the story ended and sort of where we went with what was next, because we were planning on you having to get revenge on Ray and having to like really turn him into the cops, but we realized no one was doing that. So we're like, well, I guess now you are working for him, so we're just going to keep sending you on missions for Ray as opposed to, you know, turning on him.
So is your intention to kind of keep refining this escape room, or would you make another one?
I mean, I am a perfectionist, and that's kind of the danger of the great is perfectionism. So we're still doing tweaks to Stash House. We've been open about a year, a little over a year now. And so we're going to be definitely making some tweaks in and keep improving the experience, just because there's always things that I'm going to want to improve, but also acknowledging that refining the same thing over and over again is going to be diminishing returns. So yes, we're still planning to go ahead and build more stuff in the story. I just love storytelling. And the idea of right now with immersive interactive entertainment, you know, people love TV shows because in video games that have these long spanning narratives, because you feel like you get to know these characters in this world. And immersive interactive entertainment is really starting to hit that same note where people are coming back to escape rooms and getting to know these chapters of characters in these worlds. So I want to keep pushing on it and still build out Ray's world, because Ray's world is very similar to ours. And it's fun to take, you know, real life situations in politics or news or local history and find a way to inject them into the space and kind of tell a story that you are part of.
That's really great. I can really visualize that kind of a expansion of a world and characters that you kind of keep extending like you would a series.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. We did a little interesting experience at a haunt convention that really wanted us to do something scary, or not scary, but like in the vein of what a haunt is. So we decided to create a brand new character named Crow Blackwood, who is a very bad psychic who you had to interact with. And so Crow tells really bad fortunes and is kind of a con artist, and you discover Crow isn't really even Crow's real name. And so in that process, we worked with some really talented actors who played a hilarious character that just people fell in love with, because Crow is a con artist, but exceedingly fun to talk to, you know, is completely off about every single fortune Crow tells to you. And we even made a Yelp page for Crow that people left a lot of one-star reviews on. Hilarious. Making this world sort of feel a little more. And actually, we have stickers all over our neighborhood where our escape room is. There are stickers for the psychic. So I want to keep building out sort of these superfluous, you know, interesting characters that end up being sort of more relevant to the story and connecting. So I'm excited to keep building out these weird, interesting people and creating experiences people, you know, are surprised by but want to keep digging into.
So I just I did a Google search. If you type in Stash House LA, it's the first Google result. So if you want to find out more, and if you're coming into LA, you want to book tickets or something, that's what to do. Just type in Stash Space House Space LA, first Google search result, and you can learn all about
it. Also funny. So our website, funny story, I wanted a cool website. And so we got a Swedish domain that ends in .se. So our website is stashhou.se, which looks cool, but explaining it to people is a little bit more complicated. because, yeah. You know, so I'm like, it's stash how dot, they're like, what? H-O-W dot S? And so it becomes a who's on first routine of trying to explain. So stashhousela.com also goes to that site.
Yes. Okay. That's another way to do that's it for great. Sure.
Or just do what you did. Just Google as your friend too.
Yeah, definitely. So this has been great talking to you, Tommy. Thanks so much. It's great hearing about someone who creates wonderful things and learning about the planning and scheduling tools that you use to make it happen. I hope it inspires other people to do the same.
Yeah, one bit of advice that I would really encourage people to do that I do every single time I consider anything is I make a list of all the stuff that excites me, that makes me happy, that I've enjoyed. It's a giant ongoing list of moments, whether it's in games or stories or books or even a dream or a thought. I have it ongoing because to me, what I'm really most delighted by, it's jokes I laugh at, things that scare the crap out of me, moments in movies that make my spine tingle or hair stand on edge. And I keep those as a source of inspiration. And I would encourage anyone in the creative field to do that. Because whenever I go to a moment where I'm creating something, I want to go and be inspired because, you know, reinventing the wheel is silly. I want to look at the moments that really shocked me and don't recreate them. They've already been done. But find a reason why they work and use the DNA of that, of a scare, of a laugh, of a moment that really is impactful, and find sort of what drives you. That one piece of advice that I got alone that I've been able to bake into my note-taking has been probably the most helpful thing for anything I've created is being able to pull from that list.
Wow. Do you keep like a separate, like a category of things that shock, excite, and delight you?
I don't. I at one point was going to go through and organize it, but it's so long and so many things are just all over the place that it's kind of fun. And usually I'm very organized, but in that one sense, I don't mind that it's just an ongoing list because I can scroll through and never know if it's going to be something funny or scary. And these moments will come back to me and I'll remember the context and sort of the sense of wonder of when I saw that or had that moment. So I would really encourage anyone to play with it and just keep an ongoing messy list. You know, it's okay in that sense to be messy because it's just going to be raw emotion and thoughts dashed out. But you'll never know when they serve as inspiration for something else.
I love it. Well, Tommy, thank you so much.
Thank you.